feel that there's a good possibility we'll get the waiver, but there's never a guarantee when you make those kinds of requests.
Hope for a waiver from the Jones Act for a fuel delivery to Nome. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, December 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a lawsuit over restrictions on the chronic alcoholic housing in Anchorage.
My goal would be, I guess, to hopefully meet with these plaintiffs and their attorneys and see if there isn't some other way to handle this.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and BP.
The Russian tanker Renda is steaming toward Dutch Harbor to pick up 400,000 gallons of gasoline bound for Nome. But it must first receive a waiver of the Jones Act, or it will turn north and deliver diesel fuel only. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
The tanker could not pick up gas in Japan due to gale force winds and had to go towards Dutch Harbor. The Jones Act of 1920, however, restricts shipping of American goods between domestic ports to American-flagged vessels. The tanker Renda is home-ported in Vladivostok, Russia. Sidnesok, the company purchasing the fuel, is now working with Vitus Marine, the Coast Guard, and others to secure the waiver. Sidnesok board chair Jason Evans says Jones Act waivers are typically done for matters of national defense. The team has filed a waiver that claims the fuel is of indirect significance for national security.
We do supply fuel, you know, to the state troopers, the police, state DOT to keep the airports cleared. So we feel that there's a good possibility we'll get the waiver, but there's never a guarantee when you make those kinds of requests.
If the waiver does not come within a few days, Evan says the tanker will head straight to Nome without the gas. The trip to Dutch Harbor adds several days to the journey. If the waiver does not come through, the Renda would meet up with the Coast Guard icebreaker Healy somewhere north of Dutch Harbor.
We can do the port inspection at sea and save several days of traveling by not going to Dutch Harbor. Ideally, Renda will go to the harbor and take on gasoline because ultimately we still need gasoline for the community.
Evan says the focus now is on filling up in Dutch Harbor, but the company is looking at alternatives for gas if that doesn't happen. The company was in talks last month with air freight companies to fly in fuel before the marine operation began. Flying would add $3 or $4 per gallon to the cost of delivery. The Renda is currently carrying 1 million gallons of diesel that it picked up in Korea. It's making more than 250 miles a day, according to Mark Smith, the CEO of Vitus Marine. He says the tanker is about 445 miles south-southwest of Attu in the Aleutians and is scheduled to arrive in Dutch Harbor around the 2nd of January. It's then a 4 or 5 day trip through 300 miles of ice to Nome. But before that, Evan says there's still a lot that can happen.
I'm not celebrating until the fuel's in the tanks, and I'm sure there'll be more issues that come up that we'll work through over the next few days, but I'm confident in the team that's assembled to solve kind of every issue that's been thrown at us.
Leading up to the anticipated delivery, Evan says there are daily teleconferences with over 40 people participating. The team includes representatives from state and federal governments, along with private industry and experts from a range of different fields. A specialized team from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Barrow will soon bring in ice core drilling equipment and cameras to look closely at the ice near Nome. And the Coast Guard has flown C-130s to gather ice data leading up to the early January delivery. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
A 15-year-old boy was found dead beside a snow machine in Pinkies Park in Bethel. Police have not released the boy's name yet, but say his parents had reported him missing, and search and rescue volunteers, Alaska State Troopers, and police had all been looking for him. Police say the boy's body was found yesterday at about 1 p.m. They do not know the cause of death yet, but say no foul play is suspected at this time. There were signs of hypothermia. The snow machine was located on the tundra in the brush and was not damaged. They do not yet know if alcohol or drugs were involved. The boy's remains will be transported to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage for further investigation. This is the third death this month that Bethel police are investigating. Two women were found dead in hotels in separate incidents on December 11th and December 21st. Less than a month after Carluck Manor began taking in chronic alcoholic tenants, the Housing First facility finds itself not the object, but the springboard for a lawsuit against the municipality of Anchorage. KSKA's Len Anderson explains.
The legal firm Northern Justice Project is suing the municipality on behalf of three longtime self-described chronic alcoholics. Attorney Jim Davis of Northern Justice says the suit is not against Carluck Manor, which has aroused the ire of some residents in its Fairview neighborhood. Rather, Davis says, the suit seeks to make it easier to build more resident facilities patterned on the Housing First model.
Other developers had these impediments taken out of their way so more Carluck Manors could be developed. I think that would benefit the community.
The former Red Roof Inn became the Carluck Manor only after RuralCap, which built and runs the 40-some-room facility, agreed to special requirements set by the Anchorage Assembly in its severe alcohol-dependent housing ordinance. Davis contends these expensive hoops manor developers had to jump through violate federal law.
The city of Anchorage passed an ordinance making it more difficult to develop multifamily housing for people with disabilities and passing zoning restrictions that make it more difficult to develop housing for people with disabilities is simply and plainly illegal under federal and state law.
State and federal law consider chronic alcoholism a disability. The suit says the municipality's ordinance violates the Federal Fair Housing Act and Alaska's Human Rights Act. Davis says the three plaintiffs are being deprived of possible homes because the ordinance makes it too difficult for sufficient new Housing First facilities to be developed. The suit was filed on December 20th. Municipal Attorney Dennis Wheeler says given holiday short staffing, his office has not had time to thoroughly examine, let alone respond to Davis's group. Wheeler says he understands the legal philosophy behind the suit.
If you had restrictions on where these things can go and who can be there that are so onerous as to essentially zone them out of the municipality, obviously you would raise some very problematic concerns. Because that would be the sort of tool that has been used in the past against people of color or people with mental disabilities and so on, and you just can't do that kind of thing.
Wheeler says he wishes that these federal and state legal concerns would have been brought before the Anchorage Assembly first, where legal adjustments might have occurred. Davis notes the strong pressure on the Assembly from some Fairview residents make compromising easing restrictions unlikely. And he says it wasn't until the impact became known that his clients decided to act with their lawsuit.
They have a lot of friends in situations that could benefit from other institutions or other multifamily housing like the Carluck Manor. They could too, and they just wanted to actually step up and try to do the right thing. And so they came together with us, and we had already seen that it was an issue, so it was a lawsuit we wanted to do.
The lawsuit seeks an injunction prohibiting enforcement of the severe alcohol-dependent housing ordinance and a finding that the municipal ordinance violates federal and state law. It also seeks litigation costs. Wheeler says his office needs to examine the ordinance itself and others elsewhere in the country before determining how to proceed.
What we're going to do is go back and look at the history of how the ordinance was developed, because there was the working group for homelessness issues, and the mayor has been very much interested in trying to deal with the chronic inebriate problem. My goal would be, I guess, to hopefully meet with these plaintiffs and their attorneys and see if there isn't some other way to handle this.
The municipal attorney said he had hoped to meet with the plaintiffs in the week after the filing, but they were not available. He now wants to meet in mid-January to discuss the issue in a face-to-face setting. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, surprising holiday donations to the Salvation Army in Fairbanks.
And we opened up another kettle from another location and found another silver bar, and that repeated itself 10 times. So we had a total of 10 one-ounce silver bars.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. 8 hours after you quit smoking, your blood oxygen level returns to normal. In 3 months, your lung function improves up to 30%. And 10 years after you quit, your risk of dying from lung cancer is about half that of a smoker. But right now, you're one cigarette closer to cancer. Every cigarette makes you sick, so quit smoking today. Information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Despite the weak economy, national parks in Alaska had a modest increase in visitors for 2011. The Alaska region saw about 2.32 million recreational visits over the past 12 months, up 50,000, or about 2% from 2010. Kenai Fjords and Denali National Parks had the largest increases for 2011. Those two parks, along with Glacier Bay, Klondike Gold Rush, and Sitka National Parks, account for about 90% of visits to national parks in the state. Final numbers for this calendar year will be available in the spring. The Alaska Healthcare Commission just released a series of reports that try to understand why healthcare costs so much more in Alaska. One important finding is that the cost for specialty care is much higher here than in other parts of the country. APRN's Annie Feit has this story as part of our series on the high cost of healthcare in Alaska.
The commission reports compare costs in Alaska to states in the Pacific Northwest, Hawaii, and two low-population states, Wyoming and North Dakota. On average, primary care doctors and pediatricians charge about 40% more in Alaska. But with some specialists, that number rises to 80% or more. Dr. Ward Hurlburt chairs the commission and is also the director of the Division of Public Health.
The difference in pricing has been a significant finding for us there. That I think we all know intuitively anytime you go to the doctor or the hospital or the emergency room, but to have that documented is impressive.
The fees for some common procedures can be 4 to 5 times higher than in the comparison states. In cardiology, for example, a left heart catheterization costs $2,200 in Alaska and only $400 in Washington. In orthopedics, a knee surgery costs $6,400 in Alaska and only $1,700 in Washington. Hurlburt says some of that higher cost can be attributed to the fact that everything costs more in Alaska, but not all.
Medicine is a business. It's a unique business with ethical and moral dimensions to it, but it is a business. And like most businesses, if you're in business, there is probably some tendency to charge what you can charge. If McDonald's could charge twice as much, they probably would. Here, if the competition wasn't there.
Commission members are quick to say the reports are not about finger-pointing. Commission member Jeff Davis is president of Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield in Alaska. He's also careful not to assign blame, but says having these prices documented in a very public way may be a first step towards bringing them down.
And I think the work of the commission will cause some people to do some soul-searching to say, wow, you know, I didn't realize this is what the situation was, and is this the outcome that we want for our for my particular role in the whole equation.
By soul searching, you mean who are you talking about?
Well, I think the providers are certainly going to look at what's in that report and say, is this the way it has to be? Is this the way it should be?
I called 4 different specialty care clinics in Anchorage to try to understand why their fees are so high. No one called back, but there are people in Anchorage who can see the issue from a specialist perspective. Dennis McMillan is president of the 4-Acre Group. He spent the last 20 years trying to find affordable health care plans for nonprofits in Alaska. That search has been fruitless, but he says there are good reasons the doctors are charging so much.
Now, that's not the doctor's up here's fault necessarily. To some extent, it's our fault because we want all this here. And the specialists that charge so much here because if they were living in the lower 48, they would have a lot more people to charge to make what they're making.
We're a low population state, far away from larger West Coast cities where there's more competition in the market and more patients for doctors to draw income from. One of Jeff Davis's favorite anecdotes he's heard on the commission came out of Ketchikan. He says it highlights one of the big problems with cost in Alaska.
really they need about 1.25 orthopedic surgeons in Ketchikan to meet the demand. But you can't just hire 1/4 of an orthopedic surgeon when you live on an island in Southeast Alaska. You have to hire 2. And therefore, that drives a number or a cost that's higher than you would expect if you were in an urban area.
The high cost of specialty care is just one element driving up healthcare costs in Alaska. Tomorrow, we'll look at how hospital profits may factor into the equation. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
The Salvation Army in Fairbanks received an unusual donation in its Red Collection kettles this holiday season. Salvation Army Fairbanks Major Kevin Botchin says the anonymous gifts were dropped into several of its Red Collection kettles in local storefronts on December 23rd.
We were going through the kettles, dumping the change out, getting ready to count it, and we found a silver bar. And we thought, well, this is awesome, a 1-ounce silver bar. So part of me almost thought that maybe somebody had accidentally dropped it in, emptying the pockets out. But then we opened up another kettle from another location and found another silver bar, and that repeated itself 10 times. So we had a total of 10 1-ounce silver bars.
Botchin says the bars, worth about $30 each, are the most unique donation he's encountered in his Salvation Army career.
I've been doing kettles for over 20 years, and I've never found anything but normal money in the kettle before. You hear it happening throughout the country where people drop in gold coins or silver coins, but I've never experienced it personally.
Botchin says the small rectangular bars have embossed text and pictures marking everything from Father's Day to Watergate. He suspects a single source donated the silver.
Because they all came in at the same time and the same day, it's pretty evident they came from one family. They're collector's items from the early 70s, gifts that they used to be able to buy a bar of silver as a gift for a few dollars, and they obviously held on to them for the last 40 years or near 40 years and have decided to put them to use in the community.
Botchin says the bars will be sold with proceeds going to support local Salvation Army programs. The money will be used to provide food and vouchers for clothing, furniture, and utility bills for people in need. This year, Hollywood Film Studios sent crews to Alaska to shoot scenes for the movies On Frozen Ground and Big Miracle. Both productions gave some Alaskans a chance to ham it up as extras or to work behind the scenes on the more technical aspects of movie making. As KSKA's Alan Lockyer reports, state money is now available to help pave the way for those who may want a future in film.
Alaska's Workforce Investment Board hosted a public teleconference Wednesday to hear from people interested in helping to develop the state's film industry. The state legislature has appropriated $486,000 for the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development to work with the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development to train Alaskans for work in the film and television industry. Juanetta Ayers, a division director with economic development, told participants that the objective of the meeting is to receive input on how to spend the legislative money.
The legislative intent is to increase the Alaska hire on film and television production that's occurring in Alaska. So the Workforce Investment Board has adopted regulations that will allow them to administer a grant program. The opportunity that we have today is to hear from you, people who will likely be candidates for this training, hear about what you think are the best and highest uses for these funds to get more qualified Alaskans working in film and television production.
Richard Benavides, president of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees Local 918, says his union is already engaged in training programs and is examining similar programs initiated by other states.
Obviously, the state is looking to facilitate some sort of training, but we also knew that we couldn't stand still and wait for all of this to happen. So we're starting off doing the basics to try to get everybody to understand how it works. We're bringing up some folks from the Northwest Film Training, and we're also in talks with the people in New Mexico. They also have a film class. They've offered us their curriculum. So what we're looking to do is to mesh together the things that have already been successful in other states so that we can integrate some sort of funding where we would put in money, the state would put in money to do these kind of classes.
Jonathan Butsky, who owns Talking Circle Media in Anchorage, says the program is underfunded.
There needs to be a focus on real hands-on training using the film and television production equipment available in Alaska. from companies that are here. There are companies that can provide that resource as opposed to anyone hiring anybody from out of state to provide these services. No one entity should be awarded more than 50% of the grants, and not all productions are union-based hire in Alaska, so individuals that are being trained should not be required to join a union to be involved in this program.
Brad Swenson with Gold Ring Group said the state needs to follow Hawaii's lead and lure television episodic productions with a sound stage.
One of the things that Hawaii offered the producers of Lost that was able to bring the production to the state was a sound stage that is of professional and purpose-built nature, a soundstage that can accommodate truly large-scale productions, and a facility that could also be used as a vocational training facility.
Scenes from two major Hollywood films have been shot in the Anchorage area in the past several months, and indications are that more film productions will follow. The state is attempting to maximize any economic boost that may result from luring film productions to Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by
AT&T. Rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
The family that rode a five-person bike to Fairbanks in 2010 and drove an old bus out of town this past summer is back home in Kentucky. The Harrisons, who go by the nickname Petawins, are traveling the country selling a book about their nomadic lifestyle. Bill Harrison says the family has conducted dozens of book signings throughout the West and Midwest.
We're on the road for about 3 months on the blue-collar book tour in the old bus and had a great time. According to the girls, though, you know, the bike, they preferred the bike trip. The bus trip was a good time, but, you know, on the bike, we were all together and sitting together and riding together and seeing the same things at the same time. But we had a good time overall and met a lot of new people, and we sold over 800 books.
The book, A Petawin Life, chronicles the year Bill and Amarance Harrison and their three young daughters spent biking from Kentucky to Alaska. The family lived in a cabin outside Fairbanks for the next 10 months, writing the book and restoring the 50-year-old bus they turned into a camper and drove south. Harrison says it's good to be home, but feels strange being back east.
We've been, you know, west of the Rockies for so long in all that open space, and especially up there in Alaska. And we both miss it. We miss it a lot, actually. We still got our address there. You know, our cabin, that cabin's still kind of home for us, and we still get our mail there, and we still keep in touch with a lot of people there on a regular basis. So, yeah, we're eventually going to get back there.
Harrison says signing events will take them all as far as Florida this winter as they try to sell the remaining 4,000 copies of their book. He says finances are holding out, but they're starting to book motivational speaking engagements to help pay the bills. The family has an internet following and receives donations from people across the country who admire their spirit of adventure. APRN and our affiliates are using this last week of 2011 to look back on some of the stories that left an impression, some because they were fun, but some because they were difficult to report on. We start tonight in Haines.
This is Tara Bicknell at KHNS in Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan. Reporting on the first death in an alcohol-related motor vehicle accident since I took this job was hard enough. The untimely death of a man barely 21 in a small town is one way to expose how closely connected we all are. But I'm also on the volunteer ambulance crew in our community of 2,500 people and was on the call this 4th of July night that a hometown boy took a turn too fast and didn't make it. Being on scene that summer night just months ago and ignoring that my day job is reporting didn't set in right away. Then, sitting alone in the newsroom the next day, pretending that I wasn't at the accident and had no prior information when I interviewed the chief of police, was a struggle more internal than any I faced working in the news. In small and rural towns, we all seem to have conflicts of interest of some sort. If we want to live here It seems we all need to pull double duty to make our isolated towns the place we want to live. That was one of the worst calls I've been on to this day. But it didn't just affect the whole community, it also inspired the whole community. A group stepped forward to look into the problem of youth drinking, and even the radio class students at the high school, which I also helped teach, wrote and produced their own public service announcements to talk to their friends about alcohol abuse. It's nice to report in a small town where the news matters to the people who live here. It isn't just a distant voice with headlines from a news machine. What happens here affects us and inspires us. In the Northern Panhandle, I'm Tara Bicknell.
This is Alexandra Gutierrez from KUCB in Unalaska. Sometimes the best moments in an interview don't have anything to do with the story you're reporting. That was definitely the case when I got to talk to senior citizen Shirley Booker and Verla Robinson about a greenhouse that was being built for them, one that everyone from high schoolers to Coast Guardsmen had worked on. Chatting with them about the peas and carrots they were going to grow was already a nice change of pace from reporting on the fishing industry. But my favorite part of it all was the way they talked to each other about living in Alaska, even if I didn't use it in my story.
And that's what irritates me. All these people come in from America, and they don't respect those rules.
Listen to me.
And so there aren't
coming
any.
From America.
Well, I've called it that all my life.
In Unalaska, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
This is Aaron Selbig with KBBI and Homer. It definitely wasn't big news, but one of my most memorable stories of the year happened in May when a big crane at the Homer Harbor flipped over in high winds and got stuck upside down, lying precariously close to the fuel dock. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I spent all afternoon at the scene watching a growing crowd of firefighters and harbor workers work to disentangle and remove the crane with, what else, an even bigger crane. It turned out to be quite a job, so why would I spend the better part of an entire day standing around watching this spectacle? Because I'm in radio, of course, and we live for weird sounds in radio. I'll play the tail end of the story, and you can be the judge if it was worth it. Well, we come to the part of the story where you will hear the sound of a big metal crane being pulled off of a metal building by an even bigger metal crane. I'm going to warn you up front, if you have sensitive ears, you might want to turn your radio down just for a second. Ugh, that's pretty bad. But the plan worked, the damage was limited, and most importantly, no one was hurt.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Nome, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Len Anderson and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. We had year-end reports tonight from Tara Bicknell, Alexandra Gutierrez, and Aaron Selbig. APRN's Annie Fight reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by ConocoPhillips Alaska and Matsu Health Foundation.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.